Support for WVIK comes from Quad City Bank and Trust, with 5 Quad City locations, providing consumer and commercial banking as well as trust and asset management. More information at qcbt.bank.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, whatever time of day you're listening. My name is Ben Goujon with Quad City Arts, and welcome back to Talking Art, brought to you by Quad City Bank and Trust. Today, I am talking art with songwriter, artist David G. Smith, whose upcoming album, Hero Street, drops on June 26th. David, welcome to Talking Art.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. We've known each other through Riversance. You've played at our Riversance Festival many times, but This is our first time really getting to sit down to talk, so I'm really excited.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here, and let's let her rip.
All right. Well, tell me about Hero Street. You've got this new album coming out, and Hero Street obviously has a very kind of large place in the lore of the Quad Cities, so tell me about the album. Tell me how you get involved. Tell me all the things.
Yeah, this started for me, for the song part of it, maybe 6 or 7 years ago, and I was watching something on PBS that was talking about this street, And I kind of caught my attention. And a lot of times when I'm in my studio, I've got a TV or some kind of screen on, and I'll take a little break and watch whatever's on. Well, that's what happened here. And I heard about this local film group that was putting a story together about a real street called Hero Street right here in the Quad Cities. And that got my interest, and I kind of dropped everything. Watched this, this episode, and it talked about 8 soldiers that fought in 2 wars. World War II, 6 of them fought in World War II, and 2 of them fought in the Korean War. And it was just captivating. The story was compelling. It also talked about the community where they came from and how the story all started in Mexico back in the early 1900s. So, bam, I dropped everything. I realized, wait, this street is like 30 minutes away from where I live.
Yeah.
So I got in the car after seeing that first episode and went over to what was called Hero Street in Silvis, Illinois. And just to get a feel for what the film was talking about, just got out of the car, walking up and down the street. Just like they said, it was like a block and a half long. By then, they had 2 memorials up, like that, as you would see today.
Yeah.
You know, and to get a feel for who these people are. They talked about boxcars, people living in boxcars, and that some of them were still there, covered up by siding, vinyl or aluminum siding. So I spent a couple of trips over there, took some video, saw the memorials that they had, and went back to the studio, and I just started writing songs.
Yeah.
And the first one actually was about the mother of 2 of the soldiers, Joe and Frank Sandoval, and her name was Angelina. And that became one of the 2 songs that I wrote specifically for Hero Street. Took a little more time with the actual title cut, you know, the Hero Street title cut. And because there was so much history that you'd had to condense into 3 minutes, give or take.
Sure.
That you wanted to pace it, you know, get it to pace well, not to tell too much about any one part, and yet get the story across.
Yeah.
So I'll kind of stop right there and let you take it.
it's fascinating, and as a the longer I say this, the less true it becomes. But as a fairly recent transplant to the Quad Cities, it's been interesting learning about these nuggets of history. And I took my son out, I think it was on Veterans Day last year. We went out to did a ceremony out there, and we went out there to see that and to learn about that history. But, you know, I think it's such a unique little neighborhood. And it really does take me back to those stories from the 40s and the 50s, mm-hmm. where, you know, so many large swaths of young men in our country went off to war. Mm-hmm. And we don't see that in the same way anymore. Just like warfare's changed and all of those things where it's that like, no, we're here. This is the thing that we need to get up and go do.
Right.
And put ourselves at
service. You talk about a sense of community.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And to ping off of that. So there, starting with World War One, there be, and our community, all the men of age signing up for service, there was a labor shortage because of that.
Right.
And so Rock Island Railroad puts out a call to people in Mexico. And what's going on in Mexico? Well, you've got the Pancho Villa and Zapata
right.
are fighting a war for the people, they say. Mm-hmm. And this is going on and on and on to where people are suffering terribly. They're having to, it's so bad they have to mix dirt with their food to make it last. Okay,
right.
So Rock Island Railroad puts out the word, we need people to work up here. And we will help you get here. We'll get you across the border. We'll get you into some housing here, which ended up being boxcars on the property, Rock Island Railroad property.
Right.
And so that's where the story kind of starts for Hero Street.
Yeah.
And it was later that there was an outcry from the community that had so many people living in the Rock Island on that property there that they wanted them to move away from there. Well, it turns out they moved them over onto Second Street, and that used to be a dump site, and that's part of that story. But it goes from there where they moved, transport some of those boxcar homes over to that street. They and as the song says, they built a boxcar church too.
Oh wow!
And they were able to, practice mostly Catholicism, but their religions.
Sure.
And that they brought some of that history and the culture with them as well. So that gets them to where the boys, the soldiers, the men that fought in World War II and Korean War are born there in what's called Little Mexico.
Right.
So that pushes the story forward that far.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and it's so interesting to me, just like, obviously, immigration has been a very big topic in the last few years, but 100 years ago, like we're saying, everyone, come on up.
Yeah. It's by invitation.
Yeah.
You know, in a way. And not only invitation, but assistance as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you look at you pull the camera back, if you will. Okay, you've got Mexican-American in Silvis and on this side of the river too, on the Iowa side, and you have a German component over there, which Jonathan Turner wrote a book about.
Oh, yeah.
And it was about Bucktown.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, and so you've got that German influence over there. So you've got multicultural in a way, and those are maybe two reference point cultures right there that were alive and well, you know. So you have that component. And so as far as the immigration part of it, you know, I've written other songs about that. And I've got a few co-writers out of Nashville where I've been writing now for almost 25 years and working. We try not to preach from stage or from song. And so we sat down and started thinking about this immigration business. We are a species who has been on the move since day one.
Right.
Why is that? And we're trying to come up with some, you know, common ground ideas that anybody can relate to. We're maybe looking to improve our lives, put food on the table, put a solid roof over our head, have meaningful work, and the freedom to do all that. And it's like, okay, that's working pretty good, and can we put that into a song? That we did put that into a song, and it became my first number one national song on the Roots Music Report chart back in like 2015 or so, and that was called "Mi Familia."
Mm-hmm.
So just a little bit of history there as far as the immigration part of it. And we had DJs calling us up and saying, all right, you got me there. And you know, I started crying through the second verse or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, that's the kind of response. And I'm primarily a songwriter.
Yeah.
If I'm really being honest, I'm a song rewriter because I never get it right the first time. But that song was, you know, that got us on the map.
Yeah.
And it's the kind of meaningful song that maybe would not get recorded in Nashville. And
sure.
I've had songs recorded by artists out of Nashville. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
It's just that I don't write those kind of songs that are like, do you want fries with that? That
sure.
kind of thing.
Thank
so,
you.
But that's okay. That's an art form unto itself that I just can't, I'm not good at it. So.
And no offense to those songwriters or musicians, that's my least favorite song of all time.
Yeah, but that guy's talented. I know who that guy is. And yeah, he's so talented. But anyhow, you know, so to each his own. And, you know, so as far as the immigration, back to that, it's kind of front and center. It has been for a while.
Yeah.
And I just maybe we kind of leave it there. But that's. This Hero Street story is all about immigration and the will of that community to want to be, the Gondwana, you know, of wanting to be a part of this culture, coming from
right.
another one to this one, and not extricating, but embedding themselves into, in a meaningful way.
Yeah.
You know, what better way for some, as far as some were concerned, than to serve your country?
Yeah. Well, so when you're, you know, kind of looking at these stories that you are then turning into stories in song form, like, how do you as a writer approach that?
That's, first off, I love history.
Yeah.
And so we do our best, and I say we, whenever I've got a, now I wrote Hero Street title track by myself and the Angelina song. But there's the rest of the album is almost all co-written with Tom Favreau, another one of my Nashville favorite songwriters. So we do our homework as
yeah.
best as we can. This is a research project to write almost any song. You can write about, you know, different types of songs. You can write about historical fiction. You can write about a shot in time,
yeah.
you know, kind of song too. And we've got a couple of those that we write from time to time. But I'm sorry, Paul McCartney, but there are enough love songs in the world. I'm sorry. But I like to go back into history often and see what's the history that our history teachers didn't tell us about? What are the details about, you know,
yeah.
whether it's a world war or it's a civil war, any war, the founding of our country? How did that really come together? Then all of a sudden you got a Ken Burns thing going on. You know, look at the research
right.
those people have to put together. And it takes years and years.
Yeah.
So there was a couple of books out. Mark Wilson was an author that I got onto that, and he was listed by the Rundles, who are the filmmakers for the Hero Street.
Right.
Yeah, so I got onto that book and read everything I could about it through Mark, and there was another, Carlos Harrison, I got some cheat notes here, has a The Ghosts of Hero Street.
Okay.
So I watched that as well. That was a video presentation. So I got a lot of my detail from that,
yeah.
along with the Rundles and Fourth Wall Films and the episodes they put out. By then, they had done five or six episodes.
Yeah.
And so I had a lot of material to work with here. And this actually, the one, so moving on to the episode, this song is, or this yeah, this song is part of, this is actually the last episode of 9-part series. And so how do you condense all that? So again,
right.
you're back to that how to, and down to three and a half minutes. Tricky business.
Yeah.
Tricky business. That's where the craft comes in.
Yeah.
That's where, you know, I've been writing songs for, did I say 50 years? Did I just say that? 50 years, at least somewhere, give or take. And I think a lot of experience came to bear there.
Yeah.
To get this thing right. And it's one of those things you don't want to get it wrong.
Right.
I mean, this is going, I know, in my camp, whatever I'm writing, the good stuff, I mean, it's going out to the world. Now, this, we have a way to get it out there.
Right.
And so our music's being played in places like Belgium and Australia.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure about Hawaii. I need to check that. But it's it's around.
There's someone in Hawaii listening.
Bolivia. We got, yeah, I know it's South America in general. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Well, so.
And I don't know if I ever answered your question, but how, yeah, you got to condense that.
Yeah.
And the research of it. So, yeah.
Well, I was going to say that makes me think of, like, when I research a character for a role, like, there's so much, you know, especially if it's a historical character, yeah, there's so much research that you can delve into. But then it is that, like, okay, how do I take all this, condense it into this performance or this production? And a lot of times that research for me is just like, you get it in to build that foundation and then you kind of let it go as an artist a little bit.
Okay.
From the acting side, it's like you use all that to build it, but then when you're performing, it's like that goes away and I'm just here in this moment, yeah, with my other,
yeah,
actor.
Or you're just touching on something that's like a principle for the way I write, and that is you let the song direct the traffic.
Sure.
Let the song write what it wants to write.
Yeah.
It took me a long time to figure that out. You know, I had the editor in the room for way too long, you know, early on. Oh, I can't do this right now. Whatever. But just get it out there on the table and let it sort itself out.
Mm-hmm.
And the key for me is just show up every day while you're doing it. And the muse, right, will show up with you.
Right.
And that song will direct traffic. And it's never failed. It's part of, you still have, that's the craft of music in a way, but starts to spill over into the mystery of songwriting. It's the mystery of putting together a film, you know, some kind of screenplay. And you have to pace it.
Right.
You know, it's like Cinderella, you know, you don't start out with going to the ball first, you,
right,
or that you meet the godmother. No, you start out with something else that sets up all of that. So
right,
then the payoff gets to be bigger or more impactful.
Yeah.
And setup. I can't say that enough when I do like songwriter workshops. It's like, well, yeah, you can, what's the topic you're going to write about and what goes where, the chorus, the verse and the bridge and all that. But it's all, to get down to the finer point, it's about how you set all of this stuff up, to have an impact on the listener. Because after all, it's the listener who completes every song.
Yeah.
If you think about it.
Yeah.
And I didn't make that up. I had to, you know, that was a realization. And I want to say Pete Townsend, somebody said something like, I can write all the songs in my basement I want, but it's the listener who completes them. Same way with your audience, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's a great quote by he was a famous British director, Peter Brook, who directed for the RSC. And,
yeah,
you know, he said, like, all I need is an empty space and someone walking across the space and an observer, and we've created an act of theater.
Hmm.
You know, but you need that observer. You need that listener.
Almost a validator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we could write in our basement all day long.
Right. And I have done that.
Yeah.
To no avail. I mean, yeah, it goes nowhere. But
there's things I've written that have never left the basement because they deserve to just stay in the basement.
And isn't that the mystery of it? It's like, okay, we just wrote this great song. Let's do that again. And the,
yeah,
next three songs suck.
Yeah.
I mean, they go nowhere. And why doesn't it work? And we got, you know, if there's two or more people in the room, it's like we got all this experience and still, it's just not, something's not right. So,
yeah.
And you don't, I learned finally, it took a while for that, not to force it.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not happening, if there's some kind of fatal flaw in the deal, then you need to recognize that too.
Yeah.
You know, let the muse tell you that as well.
Yeah.
And in this business about songs channeling through and all that, you know, I'm really an astrology and crystals kind of guy, but there's something going on there.
There is.
You know, and I have to, you know, give it its due, and I do my best to do that.
Yeah, and, you know, I find as an artist, like, I have projects that I have reams of research on that I started 20 years ago,
mm-hmm,
that, you know, every now and again, something goes in that pile, but it's the muse has not, and whether that's cosmically, like, you're not ready for that, or the world's not ready for that, or this isn't the time for that. And then the next project pop up and it'll be like, this is the thing right now. We have to do it right now. And it all just goes whoosh.
Yeah. Because the time was right or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, whatever that is. It's almost like having, I have a simmer pile of all these ideas. And when we're, the ideas dry up or whatever, we can refer to that.
Right.
And what's what's kind of pulsing? What's going on? Anything there that's pulsing?
Yeah.
Oh.
I guess time to bring this over.
Yeah, right. And sometimes ideas are prescient. They're like, they're ahead of their time, but they know what's coming down the road. That kills me. It's like, I don't know how many times I've seen something like that. Or a song in my catalog that I wrote 40 years ago, 30 years ago, all of a sudden, it's just as necessary now, even more so, because of the times that we might be in. Oh, that just never ceases. And you talk about, will I ever get tired of writing songs? No, and that's the reason why. There's the challenge of it, always keeps me coming back, and the surprise of it, the mystery of it.
Yeah.
Probably the mystery is the biggest, and the mystery is the greatest of these,
Right.
kind of thing. And it just, I play a lot of tennis. I love tennis. I'm going down to Kansas City today to play in a tennis tournament. And as much as I love tennis, if it ever came between music and tennis, music.
Yeah. Well, like you said, it's that challenge. Like, that's what keeps me coming back to theater and to performing, is whether it's a particular role or a show or, I find a lot of the projects I pick now are projects that I don't know if I can do well, because I want the challenge of that.
Mm-hmm.
Things that are, unless there's a good paycheck attached, things that are like, oh yeah, I can knock that out of the park easy.
We have jobs like that too.
Yeah. those don't have as much appeal as the, like, oh, that thing looks like it's going to be really hard. I want to push myself in that
way.
The
challenge, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe the discovery. Because if I'm writing something that's like, you got to be brutally honest if you're going to write a decent song. It's just part of the deal. And then all of a sudden I'm discovering something about myself that maybe isn't so cool.
Right.
And I'm sure you run into, and challenging pieces tend to be more about discovery.
Yeah.
The more challenging the topic to write about tend to be more about discovery. And maybe if you get lucky, that discovery connects emotionally with your listener, with your audience.
Right.
And then all of a sudden we're all discovering something together.
Yeah.
You're making that. And again, if you're not evoking emotion, either as a performer, as a songwriter, oops, you might be a little dead in the water.
Right.
And so back to the drawing board. And, and that's where the listener is totally necessary. Are they tapping their foot? Are they paying attention to your performance? Yeah. And are you connecting with each other?
Yeah.
Because it is a two-way street.
Well, and it's that idea too, I think, with that of, and you spoke about all the details and research that you put into the songwriting. Those specific details are the things that make things universal.
Mm.
If we're writing very generally, or, that doesn't connect to people the way that a specific detail in the writing, whether it's about a shoe or whatever the thing is, like, we all connect to those little details of life that maybe aren't celebrated or put out, or you're not sharing online or whatever. But when someone else talks about, oh, my shoe was scuffed and it made me feel bad all day, like, we can all relate to that.
Mm.
It's not something you're broadcasting, but, like, you notice it. And
it's a dance.
Yeah.
You know, you're on stage, I would imagine, and that you've got to, you know, balance between some of the detail that everybody can relate to that leads and supports the universal idea you're trying to get across.
Yeah.
You know, and in performance like that, it could be the look on your face after you've said something more than what you said.
Right.
Right? I mean, I acted in high school, and I was lousy at it. But because I could do a little bit of singing, they had
I played in a band in high school. I played the tambourine and the harmonica. So
no cowbell?
No. I did a few little keyboard things on like a Casio, like, here's an alien noise.
yeah. So, I mean, so it's a lot of crossover and similarity there between performance and acting and songwriting. So,
yeah. So how did you... You said the last episode of Hero Street, which the title track is part of.
Yeah, the
is John, on QPT.
The Last to Fall is the name of it.
Okay.
And then the Johnny Munoz story.
Got it.
Yeah.
Now, how did you get actually like connected with the Rundles who have created that series?
Okay, so we had a little dinner party. Chris Ryder from WQPTV introduced us. He knew both of us and said, you guys need to know each other.
Yeah.
Because you're both working on the same project, for crying out loud. So we met, and after our little get-together, I sent over what I had to Tammy and Kelly Rundle. And within 48 hours, they were back, oh, yeah, this is going to work. So we changed up the lyric a little bit. On the Hero Street track, and then I went down to Nashville and I recorded the soundtrack.
Yeah.
And wham, bam, bang, and just no muss, no fuss. And I was telling you earlier that I've spent as much time as I spent in Nashville. I mean, you couldn't find this. And here I'm finding this in my own backyard.
Right.
You know, here in the Quad Cities. Not only the connection, but the story is right there.
Yeah.
And it's like... It's just so cool and so compelling. And so it took another year for them to go ahead and capture what they needed to capture.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Fourth Wall Films is their company. And they're not doing these segments in episodes in order because they have to do the interviews and all that with people who are, they're in their 90s.
Right.
Later stages of life, they got to catch them, you know. And so... that was part of the reason, like, this is the last episode, as opposed to being, like, the next in line sequentially.
Right.
So it took another year or so, and so we finally, fast forward, we did the, they did the premiere of Hero Street, The Last to Fall, featuring the Johnny Munoz story, and he fought in the Korean War.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they use this Hero Street, which really covers all of their episodes as far as the story itself and the song. Last Veterans Day, the Saturday right around Veterans Day in November, they premiered that over at Putnam Museum.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked me to come in. I played another song called Angelina, who was one of the mothers to two of the sons, Angelina Sandoval. And I played that song for the crowd. We had a pretty much sold out crowd there at the big screen at the Putnam. That theater. So we had the premiere there, and then this past March 29, I think it was, WQPTV aired the segment for the first time.
Yeah.
So on PBS. So they just showed it again the Sunday before Memorial Day, Sunday evening, along with a couple of the other episodes that the Rundles have put together. And they have won, it's already won an award, The Last to Fall. I don't know where it was, somewhere in Illinois, but they have sent this film out, which they do with all their episodes, to film festivals around the U.S. And so we're still kind of waiting to see how that turns out. We will probably hit up Iowa Public TV and some others. This has legs. I mean, this is going to be around a while, and we've kind of teamed up. And when I do promo, we have a team of people, radio, publicity, social media manager, graphic artist, as needed, or day-to-day operations. And so the two camps here, the Rundles and mine, have teamed up to help each other out with this Hero Street. And I've got to say, the Rundles, I mean, they know what they're doing. And just check out their website, fourthwallfilms.com. Yeah. They've got other, they've got a piece on Harriet Beecher Stowe that is just outstanding.
Yeah.
And if you're any kind of history buff, these guys do their research. You can tell.
That's
so
awesome.
Anyhow, so that kind of brings us up to speed as far as, marrying the two projects together.
That's awesome. Well, and it's just so cool. Like we were talking earlier, the fortuitousness of just all these things coming together.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's like we talk
right
about
here.
That all the time. I know, right. It's like there's some more mystery and there's more magic, you know, just flat out magic. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's very cool. Mm-hmm. Well, I would love to know, you said you've been songwriting for 50 years. Mm. How'd that start?
Yeah, that and it's pretty.
I mean, I'm sure we could talk for hours about your career.
No, we won't do that. I promise we won't do that. I didn't have a chance. I mean, I came from a musical family.
Okay.
So mom and dad played, sang. We didn't know until later in life that dad was in school plays. I mean, he was such a sandbagger, that guy. And wouldn't tell us anything about the arts part of his life.
Yeah.
He was a farmer. He loved farming. But we had, so in our family, five siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And piano lessons were mandatory beginning second grade.
Okay.
No goofing around. We're getting on to it. And we were Catholic upbringing. So Catholic nun teaching us, Sister LaDonna. And she was a sweetheart and teaching us whatever at that age. So that kind of blossomed, expanded to, and I'm the oldest of five, where you're picking up, this is during the Beatles, that's how old I am. The Beatles are coming over and making their debut. My two younger brothers are in that age group. We're all picking up guitars, the heck with a keyboard.
Sure.
You know, I stayed with the keyboard. The rest of them pick up guitars, drums, flute, piccolo. It's our sisters who are really talented.
Yeah.
They got, one is performance piano at the University of Iowa. The other got scholarship for piccolo and flute in Northern Iowa. And the brothers were kind of knuckle draggers like our dad, you know. And so we just, you know, more of the artsy, fartsy kind of other paths that you can take with music.
Yeah.
And, but all wonderful players. I got most of them recorded. They are on these albums that I put together.
Yeah, that's really cool.
So we got some family tradition there.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say it's particularly wonderful that we did this when we did it. One of my brothers has the Parkinson's, and that he's kind of, I mean, he's fighting it.
Yeah.
But it does affect how we can play. And he was,
sure.
These guys are good players. So anyhow, how did I get into this thing? I'm the one who became the songwriter out of the bunch. My sister does a little bit of writing as well, one of my sisters. And that just tripped my trigger. I was 10 years out of University of Iowa, living in Colorado, full-time music there, all original music. It finally registered in my brain, I really like this writing thing.
Yeah.
And so that's where I went from 10 years in Colorado to move down to Nashville.
Okay.
And I've really been there ever since.
Yeah.
You know, and once technology kicked in, I realized I could do this from a distance.
Right.
And maintain a relationship there.
Right.
Which you need to have there to do anything. So, and I've been very lucky as a songwriter. I've hit about everything on the songwriter target that a songwriter would want to.
Yeah.
I don't have a major artist cut per se. Tim McGraw, are you listening? Sting, could you do one more song? But I've had some really good luck. Reese Palmer, I have a cut. This is back in 2007. A cut with her that she is the third black female country artist to ever chart on Billboard.
Oh, wow.
And is with an album that I had a song on.
That's
really
awesome.
Really proud of that cut.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was one. There was Linda Martell in 1970 and Donna Mesa in the 80s and Reese in the 2007. That song went on to, I got my first sync licensing through that song. It was kind of a calling card song. And with Saving Grace on TNT. And that song also was on Travel Channel. It was on a Lifetime network. I had some other cuts that went on to Lifetime. And then there's some cuts that are on PBS, other PBS shows and that sort of thing. So I was down there as a pure songwriter.
Yeah.
Pure songwriter. And that's making a distinction between what I'm doing now. Mm-hmm. So I started chasing, and I will admit it, be the first to admit it, started chasing Music Row in Nashville.
Sure.
Trying to get those more cuts.
Right.
And I had that calling card with Reseat. And at that same time, one of our songs won the International Song Contest first place in the country category. That was 2008. So I had some good stuff going on, but I never could seem to cross that line to get a song cut with a major artist.
Yeah.
So another three or four years anyhow, and that would have put me in Nashville for 15 years, and I was getting pretty burnt out. Because yeah. I wasn't really feeding my soul, but I was trying to write for somebody else, and I didn't realize I was going in a wrong direction. So I ended up in Costa Rica. Of course.
Of course.
Of course, Costa Rica. Why not? Where there was
That was my second guess.
Where there was a songwriting workshop that featured Daryl Scott, Beth Nielsen Chapman, six number ones, including Faith Hill's This Kiss.
Yeah.
And then, and Daryl's like a national treasure, and then Mary Gaucher. Mary Gaucher, if you don't know who that is already a Grammy-nominated songwriter, mm-hmm. Who opened for John Prine and ran in that kind of circle. And she's been written up by the New York Times, Rolling Stone, LA Times, as just as good as Bob Dylan himself.
Yeah.
So this lady has got it going on. She's been in my corner ever since.
Yeah.
She's on my albums, and that, they gave me a good kick in the you-know-where and said, get your artist hat back on, Dave, and go do that. That's where you belong.
Yeah.
And I've never looked back since.
That's cool.
12 albums later, here we are.
Right, here we are.
Yeah, for better or worse.
Well, and you know, it's so interesting. Like, we were talking before the show about kind of my journey in New York and feeling yes. unfulfilled and listening to you talk about that. And like you had that same moment. Yeah. I moved to the Midwest and started a family and you went to Costa Rica and kickstarted things.
Yeah, started something. I don't know what you want to call that, but yeah, it was, and it's been way more fulfilling. I have to admit, these guys could see right through me. I mean, it was like, and that's what I needed.
Sure.
Someone to talk honestly to me. Because on the road, not so much. Let's just say that. Not so much, you know. But I think sometimes you got to be there to get here.
Right.
Otherwise, you don't recognize here.
Right.
When you're there, you know.
Well, and that's the wonderful thing about a life journey as an artist is, you know, you can have all the plans of this is what success looks like to me.
Yeah.
And the business or life or any of those things divert you another way. And if you're open to it and willing and have acceptance and all those things, like, it's going to take you where you need to be versus trying to bang your head against the wall for this is the thing.
Which is like we were talking about with screenplays and writing songs.
Yeah.
Let the song dictate.
Yeah.
You know, and you probably will fare a lot better. And you still have to accept whatever it tells you. So.
And here we are.
Well, yeah, and here we are 12 albums later. And my wife and I talk about this a lot, it's a recurring discussion about creating the life, creating the life that you envision for yourself. And you're walking a fine line between it's all about me. No, it's not all about me. All the time. Yeah. And I don't think anybody, you know, escapes that struggle, and which it is sometimes. But when it's a flow, it isn't.
Right.
It isn't a struggle. But it goes back and forth.
Yeah, I remember reading at one point, and I think this was in The Art of War or a similar sort of book with, you know, some Buddhist philosophy underpinnings, but about just trying to think of yourself like water, as far as like, if water comes up against a rock in the stream, it doesn't try to push through the rock. It yields to the rock and then moves around and continues forward. Mm-hmm. And I like to try to move through life in that same way, where if there's an obstacle that's not going to move.
Big paradox there. So you could also apply that axiom of a path of least resistance, but that comes almost with a negative, you know, connotation.
Yes.
But it isn't that.
No.
It is least resistance in a way, but it's also maybe a preferable path. And it's the discovery that comes with that journey.
Right.
To find out which is which. And three things I believe in. They are change. Mm-hmm. Always change. You know, you don't like what's going on. It's like the weather. Wait 5 minutes kind of thing. There's always change. Humor. Humor gets us through life. It's an elixir. If you can just find enough of it. And again, the greatest of these is paradox. The
yeah.
very thing that you think you believe in is shaking the foundations of your belief system.
Right.
How many times does that happen? If you're really out there trying.
Yeah.
And you're not taking necessarily the path of least resistance.
Right.
So that paradox, that water analogy, it's great, you know.
Well, and it is. And I've struggled with that exact idea of like, is that just least resistance? But it's, for me, it's in the acceptance of the obstacle that is the power versus just the, here's our rock, here's our stream. I'm accepting it and going around it versus I'm just veering completely away from it because I don't want to deal with it.
Some of the rock might be a challenge too.
Some
a challenge,
of the rock might
which
be the
what
challenge.
Does challenge give you opportunity to grow
yeah.
for growth maybe?
Yeah.
And I think that you were alluding to that with the challenging parts you can be take as an actor. That's what allows growth.
Yeah.
And if you aren't making mistakes, you're not learning anything.
Right.
Yeah, that's in there somewhere.
Yeah.
So, oh Lord, haven't we made, I mean, I'm over here making mistakes every day. So, and then I go to songwriter workshops, even more and more, it's become more and more about the mystery of songwriting, the mystery. Y'all, I mean, I come into a room right away, the first thing I say usually is, y'all know how to write a song. And I don't care if there's a seventh grader sitting there. Y'all know how to write a song already. It's in there. It's
yeah.
in there. I will guide you to what you already know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I know that much because you're here. You showed up.
Right.
You showed up.
Yeah. And that's, to me, that's one of the biggest parts of life is showing up.
Yeah. Action speaking louder than yep. words kind of thing, deal there.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, anything else you want to get out there? Do you have any live performances coming up in the area?
We have got some cool stuff coming up.
Yeah.
Every year, too, and every album. I'm getting more selective with where I play. I want to talk about give back just a little bit. Where I play. I go to senior communities all the time as part of a give back series.
Yeah.
Never find a more appreciative audience.
Yeah.
And an audience that many times cannot access the arts.
Right.
And as a matter of fact, if there's ways to take plays or, you know, an acting troupe in or something, a dance troupe, these people will love you forever. I mean, and for me as a songwriter, talk about people who have stories.
Yeah.
Every one of those people sitting out there, everybody in this room today has a story that they're writing. And they're all necessary. They're
yeah.
all important. So we do this give back, and I've got, that's just a regular, probably 20% of my shows are in senior communities, skilled nursing, independent living, assisted,
yeah.
a few cancer wards, that kind of thing. So, and then for Hero Street, I'm doing a show at the Moline Public Library. This is in Hero Street's backyard,
yeah,
and that's going to be in July. July 14th, it's a Tuesday in the afternoon. And what better place for a lyricist than a library?
Yeah.
And stay tuned on the Rundles. I just got emails from both them and Moline Public Library that they probably will do a screening down there.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. And so there's that. So the Moline. The other one I'm going to plug isn't so much about Hero Street, but these songs will be in the show. I host shows at the Bluebird Cafe in Nashville. Mm-hmm. And for anybody who doesn't know what that means, it is one of the premier songwriter clubs on the planet. Everybody wants to play there. Steven Tyler wants to play there. He has played there.
Yeah.
Michael McDonald has played there. Some big time, Vince Gill. But this is where the songwriters rule. This is where the song actually rules. And so I want to bring that experience up to Iowa.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do that at CSPS in August, on August 20th. And we're going to bring some of my friends from Nashville. Is going to be one of them is Kevin Gordon, who has cuts with Levon Helm from the band, from a little band called the Rolling Stones, Keith Richards, and many others. And so Kevin and I have done shows before. Carol Montag is a native Iowan that also will be in the show. We're going to bring that Bluebird experience onto the CSPS stage. There'll be three of us in a row, take turns singing songs and doing our thing. So, and what else? I think that, and stay tuned as far as what the Rundles, man, what they're doing with, again, with all the whole series.
Yeah.
They're going to shop this, as I understand, when they get it all finished, all nine parts, this will be shopped to the mothership.
Yeah.
PBS mothership. So kind of like a Ken Burns kind of deal. So.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping to get them on the podcast sometime soon.
They'll do it. They're just, they're busy.
They're busy people.
All right. I'll give them a little, light a little fire.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today, David.
Man.
Yeah. It's a pleasure to actually get to sit down and talk with you.
You bet.
Absolutely. You can find more about David at www.davidgsmithmusic.com. Hero Street drops on June 26th, and you can go check it out at the Moline Public Library on July 14th.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you to my guest, David. Thanks to my producer, Josh, the man on the mix over there. And thank you once again to Quad City Bank and Trust for their support. I'm Ben Goujon. This was Talking Art.